Welcome to the Shuffle Brothers podcast. In this episode, we're not watching The Dwarf, but we're going to the movies to watch The First Omen. It's the prequel to The Omen no one asked for, but we got it anyway, and tells the story of the birth of Damien, the Antichrist. It's a movie with many surprises, but the question is The First Omen better than The First Omen? Find out now.
Well, I can probably answer that right now, Jason.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's pretty good.
Well, thanks everyone for tuning into the podcast. We'll be back next week with Justice. It is.
Shall we just address the elephant in the room, Jason? That we are not doing a Red Dwarf Shuffle episode per se. Today, doing a review on a movie, and it might be a good idea just to explain to the audience why and how it links to Red Dwarf at all.
Yeah, because there are actually a lot of links between The Omen and Red Dwarf, but we're
both have Dwayne Dibley in them.
Both of them do. The Antichrist himself.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. His style is pretty close.
You know, originally in the first one, when they were opening up the coffin to see Damien's mum, and it's like a skeletal jackal, it was originally going to be Dwayne Dibley.
Yeah, you could tell by the teeth.
Yes.
All of you shufflers, we were always going to open the podcast up to a few different types of episodes, and since we are progressing through Red Dwarf, that's not going to change. We're going through it at a steady pace, and we want to kind of linger on this sort of what I perceive to be the golden era, and one way we can do that is by inserting extra episodes that do have something in common, a factor that is common to Red Dwarf. And our experience of that, the movie we're talking about today, and that common factor is nostalgia. All of us, or at least most of us, have comfortable memories that we are attached to. Red Dwarf, for me personally, invokes certain feelings of family, happy times, comfortable living, and many laughs. As we go back and we rewatch Red Dwarf for this podcast, what we found is that we both share completely new insights into the show by watching it with a more critical viewpoint. We take in a lot more detail, and thankfully for us, Red Dwarf turned out to be a bit more substantial and thought-provoking than just a nice, funny hug from the past. The First Omen is the name of the film we'll be reviewing today, and since it has an old franchise of movies that it draws upon, the classic Omen films, we thought that we would go and see it and have a good old conversation about it, as it's both its own movie and it's also part of a series which is now almost 50 years old.
Yeah, and that makes you think, doesn't it? The child from The First Omen is now probably in his 60s.
He looked like a Tory politician when he was 3 years old.
He does, doesn't he?
And so he becomes when he becomes Satan, full-fledged.
Yeah.
So let's have a little chinwag about that original 1976 film, The Omen. Do you remember when we went to see it? Or, well, we didn't go see it in theatres, but we would have seen it on TV.
So I remember it was probably through Mum, because most of our horror movies came from Mum.
Yeah, believe it or not.
Dad doesn't believe in anything spiritual, ghosts, monsters, anything horror. And for some reason, he extends that disbelief in horror to fictional situations in horror movies. So it's all a load of nonsense. Well, no one was saying that it isn't a load of nonsense.
It's supposed to be fake.
He went to see a horror movie with Mum once when he was 18, Dad.
Yeah.
And halfway through the movie, the whole thing turned off, and Dad had pulled out the cable, like the power adapter, and then he stood at the front of the theater, made a huge speech about how there's no such thing as ghosts.
Yeah, he talked about ghosts the same way he talks about football referees.
Yeah, he does.
Absolute bastards.
Don't exist. Even the thought of suspending your disbelief is ridiculous. So it would have been through Mum. that we saw The Omen. And that was the last time I saw it, was actually when Mum came over to Melbourne to, you know, stay for
a really?
Week. Yeah, so we put it on and watched the original Omen again. I actually really enjoyed it.
It's a good film.
It is very, very good.
It kind of stands out, that that first 76 film. It's sort of playing into the horror genre, which can be seen as quite schlocky, particularly like 70s and 80s, even though it has certain elements which are a bit exploitative of violent deaths and you know, spooky imagery and stuff. It does seem to have a certain maturity about it.
The thing about it is that The Omen, and you can tell me that you disagree with it, The Omen is similar to The Shining in the way that I look at it, in that so many films have copied something from The Omen since it came out.
Yeah.
But the thing about The Omen is that barely anyone actually talks about The Omen anymore, but it's very, very influential. If you didn't have Damien, who is probably still the best scary child in horror movie, you wouldn't have scary children in horror movies. He's fantastic.
He doesn't do horror tropey things like stand in a long corridor and look at you and say, "Why won't you play with me?"
No, he just gets his dog to maul you. while he stares, honestly, while you're beating Mrs. Braylock, with a...
I'm telling you, Jace, it's Baylock.
Sorry.
Fucking Braycock. He basically outsources his evil to his allies, which are, in the 76 film, it's his nanny and his his giant bulldog thing that he has.
Gets so many chances. Like, she's basically evil from the start, and they should have just kicked her out. We checked with the agency. We don't go through an agency. How did you get know about this job? Well, I just thought I'd come to help.
Mrs. Braycog, why is there a big fucking dog in our house?
Damien seemed to like this bull mastiff.
Well, get rid of it. Why haven't you gotten rid of it? This is your Sith warning.
For a foreign diplomat, he gives so many chances to this fucking
They should have kicked her out at the very start when she said that Damien shouldn't go to church. That would be enough to go, "All right, you're overstepping your boundaries. You're out of here, Braycock." Baylock.
Baylock. when your son like actually has a physical aversion to going to church, Baylock seems to actively seek to prevent him from going there. You know, I think alarm bells would be ringing. Yeah, there's something wrong with my kid. He's pretty fucked up.
The fact that he's never got sick is cause for alarm.
I've never raised a child before, but I'd say children generally get sick pretty easily, don't they?
Exactly. So Damien's a little shit of a child. He's evil.
He doesn't talk much.
No, he doesn't. The main verbalizations you get from Damien are usually when he's causing trouble or trying to drive his mum insane to stop her from giving birth to a sibling. It seems, and we'll talk quickly about Omen 2 and 3, but it seems like he knows who he is in the first Omen, and it seems like he forgets who he is in the second Omen. It's very cool. It mixes, you know, I like the setting of it being in England, not because it's in England, but...
Very pro-English on this podcast.
No, on this podcast. Not at all. English for the English. Good heavens, man. But no, what I'm trying to say is that, you know, it starts off in Italy, like it's an ancient evil coming from, you know, part of the world. And then England is sort of like the... When you think about how it's presented, it's like the middle of modernity and ancient structures everywhere at the same time. And he's going to be going to America from there. So he is like an ancient evil who's going to take over the world.
To the new power.
And there's a lot of old religious things in the UK. And I like the way, you know, for God, I suppose, and his impact on the film and trying to stop The Omen. It's more just he's got a few aces up his hole. That's not the word, is it? Up his sleeve.
Up his sleeve.
His celestial sleeve. Because Damien can't go to a church, so he's pretty useless there. The only problem is that he does take the non-interventionalist thing a little bit too far. So he could easily have stopped Damien, quite frankly. But I think he's leaving it up to the humans at this point. who at times are less than competent.
Yeah, as we find out in the Omen 3, Jesus and God are very much real.
They're the real deal.
They're the ones that end up kicking Damien dead.
Yeah,
after he's been shot. Of
course, he gets stabbed by the Mikado dagger. I love the idea of the Mikado dagger, that it kills the physical form and the spirit, because just killing Damien wouldn't be enough. He's got to be like completely wiped into nothingness.
It's like the friggin' Dragon Slayer. To me, it does seem like Jesus wanted to just take credit in that scene, because it's sort of like, you know, the priests had done everything. Jesus hadn't stepped in at all.
He's like Goku, isn't he?
Yeah. Everybody gets stuck into the enemy of the weak, and they get battered and they try their hardest, and then Goku just shows up.
You know, I think that Damien just completely outclassed. There was the bit when he was throwing loads of lasers at Jesus, and then there was all that smoke, and he started laughing, saying Jesus walks through the smoke, and he's like, what? Impossible! Yeah,
that happened about 10 times in the church scene.
Oh man, how come that didn't work? I'm afraid your eyes don't deceive you. Here's an amazing power level.
My God, he was so fast, I literally shat my pants. So yeah, combined with the sequels 2 and 3 of The Omen, the franchise itself is a generational sort of thing, isn't it? It always follows Damien, and as he gets older, he comes into the power that certain groups have wanted him to attain. So his downfall comes when he's at the height of his power.
Oh, we get The Omen 4, which is about a little girl who's also Damien, but we don't talk about that one.
Yeah, I don't think that one properly exists. I mean, it exists, but you're not supposed to know about it because it was bad. And and then we had a reboot, and I remember going to the cinema to watch the reboot, and it was just basically all the same stuff happened, plus a few mirror jump scares and CGI death scenes. And it really had no business even existing. What that does is it brings us to the current iteration of The Omen, named The First Omen, which could get a bit confusing, but we'll be differentiating between this new film, The First Omen, and the old film, The Original Omen.
So for this one, we're going to be calling this F Omen. Oh, that's too obvious. How about The First O?
Yeah, why not? Yeah, this is a 2024 film. Jason, you went to see it first, and then he insisted that I watch it, and I watched it too, and I think both of us were quite impressed with it. It acts as a prequel to the original 76 film.
It's a very impressive movie. It stands on its own, I think, very well. It's a far more graphic movie than the first Omen, as in, Omen 1, we'll say that, or just the Omen. It's...
Just the original Omen, Jace. Just say the original.
The OG Omen. It's far better than the OG Omen. It's more graphic than the OG Omen. it's far more graphic, but it tells a very different story in a very different way. And the way it links to the first, to the Omen, is, I think, quite impressive.
Oh my God. So we just give a general overview of the plot for this new film. So the story follows the character Margaret, played by somebody called Nell Tiger Freedom. Yeah, make of that what you will. Who is a novitiate to the Roman Catholic Church in Rome 1971. So before the events of the original Omen.
Yes.
Trying to become a devoted nun to the faith during a time of political and civil unrest, as secularist youths take to the streets to protest the role religion has as a state power. During her time in this orphanage, she experiences many disturbing events that, with the help of Father Brennan, Ralph Ineson, lead her to uncover a conspiracy to bring about the birth of the Antichrist, Damien. So obviously this movie deals with the conception of Damien.
Yes.
as opposed to the rearing of the child. So we will warn you just beforehand that there may be one or two spoilers in here. If you do have a problem with spoilers and you want to listen to the whole of this episode, what I would suggest is you listen to this and then you wait for a long time until you've forgotten everything we've talked about and then go see it. So what were you expecting when we came into this prequel? Did you know it was a prequel before you went to see
it? I knew it was a prequel because I saw the trailer before Baghead. That was a terrible movie. Don't see that. Damien would beat up Baghead. I knew it was a prequel. So with Corkmouth, yeah, he'd tore a career off. I knew it was a prequel going into it. And I thought, to be honest, like a lot of rehashes, it was probably going to be either really boring or it was going to be, you know, just terrible. And for, you know, like a lot of prequels are of this caliber, the Disneyland version of The Omen. So you'd be on a little ride and you see, oh, look, the animals are upset. Oh, look, someone's hung themselves. Oh, look, there's a little boy on a tricycle. And he's knocked someone over the edge. And look, the photos have lines in them. that's what I was thinking was going to happen. My expectations, yeah, they did not match at all. It was, what did you think? What were you expecting?
Well, I went in knowing it was a prequel because you told me it was, you know, and I knew that you enjoyed it. So I went in with sort of middling expectations, sort of expecting it to not be as good as you said it was. But you know, it was pretty solid. I really liked it.
Yeah.
One thing that you did tell me was that it was so bloody close to Rosemary's Baby in terms of the plot. And that was one thing that I was sort of looking for comfort in, because Rosemary's Baby is a very good film and it deals with the same aspects of you can't trust anyone around you. It's a conspiracy to basically get you to birth Damien, the devil child. So yeah, there's a lot of similarities between this and Rosemary's Baby. Getting in straight off the bat, I went there after work. I was already pretty tired, but having sat through the first scene featuring Charles Dance and Ralph Ineson, we see that the crazy priest who has this conspiracy theory that they're trying to bring Satan into the world is closing in on some new evidence that leads him to Rome. Then a mysterious act of God happens and the priest that gave him the information dies horribly in a so-called accident. From there, I was basically in. I was ready for good old Omen-y fun. So, yeah, after seeing that first death right at the beginning, it did make me think that there was going to be many, many more of those sort of deaths, which didn't turn out to be the case.
No, it becomes quite a, probably say it becomes more like Hereditary or, you know, a more modern psychological horror movie. You'll have lots of apparitions that'll take place, a lot of really graphic imagery. There are some scenes in this that are particularly graphic. You know, that first scene had me worried in the sense that it was going to be a slocky murder fest, just because I like the first scene. It sets things up, but there are some very strange things about it. And when Tywin Lannister died, you know, I thought that was a bit odd. What you're sort of getting with this film, it's a little bit more psychological than the first movie. It's way more graphic when it needs to be, and it moves in a very different way. Like, it isn't, the focus is in the main character trying to prove that there's something wrong or people trying to reach out to them. What the fuck am I saying? That does happen.
it definitely does.
It's more insular. Like, the stakes are somewhat smaller at the start of it, and there's a bit more of a mystery about what's going on, even if it's obvious the nuns are evil.
But that's because we know movies.
It's quite artistic.
So are there really any similarities between the original and this one, plot-wise?
The only similarity, really, is when Bill Nighy rides a tricycle and knocks the main character off a balcony.
yeah, that doesn't happen though, does it, Jason?
That doesn't happen. But, no,
it would have been. It'd be funny. It would have been amazing.
Yeah,
because Bill Nighy, you know, he's just got that face, doesn't he? Like a sort of upset duck. you know, and you can see an upset duck riding a trike and just trying to kill somebody with that.
His knees would be going over his head while he's driving it, and he'd be dressed as the priest as well, so it would just look hilarious.
Cardinal Lawrence, yeah. What it does have in common with the original is that there is a sort of conspiracy, and the one in this prequel is trying to have Damien conceived in somebody's pregnant body. Who that's going to be, we don't know at the start, but we do find out that there's a bit of a red herring. It turns out that the pregnancy might be happening a bit closer to home.
But there's a few twists in this. A few of them take you by surprise, but something I did like about the movie is that when these twists happen, you tend to get an inkling that that twist is going to happen before it happens, if that makes sense. And usually it's just before. So you get to feel surprised and smart at the same time.
Bit of both. You can see things lining up, but you're just wondering when the penny's going to drop for all the characters.
It's quite captivating, really. You know, like, we've been given some dodgy popcorn. You know, I was going to go up and ask for some more, but I couldn't actually take my way. I couldn't actually be bothered to get up because I really just wanted to see what was going to happen.
You got dodgy popcorn.
Barely any of the seeds or the corn kernels had popped. So they were just like hard as nails. Yeah. So they were lucky the movie was good.
Not so good to snack on, really. I do still enjoy a hard kernel. no, that sounds bad.
A hard kernel.
Well. In the military. Yeah,
I always thought you got a little bit too excited when we watched Full Metal Jacket.
Oh, hey-o. One thing that I was totally surprised that they didn't do here, the old trope from the original Omen, which is the what I'll call the doom photos. In the original Omen, there's this character who's a cameraman, and he takes photos of all of the main players in the story, and he sort of becomes a part of the uncovering of the conspiracy. It's his photos that really basically are part of the horror, because when you look at the photographs that he's developed, they'll have like maybe a shadow looming in on a character that's about to die. The photos will act as a premonition to some pretty graphic death scenes in the original. And yeah, I thought, there's no way they're not going to do that in this film, because that's such a gimmick that is pretty much the Omen's property. Yeah, I really thought that they were going to do loads of those. There were literally no doom photos, and I kind of had to tip my hat off to it for that, for not going for the low-hanging fruit, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's the real, because that's a very interesting part of the original movie, that there is a time limit on, really, the characters know they're going to die if they don't do something. So it does add a lot of suspense, because you know when they realize these photos are showing when they're going to die or how they're going to die, you know it's going to happen. So it does add a lot of drama, but they don't do it in this one at all. You know, there are photos in the movie, but they're not doom photos. So it's really good in that sense. Like the stuff that you expect to see, they don't put it in there.
Yeah. Oh, there was one thing that I actually didn't expect to see, but was pretty much exactly the same as the original. It was the hanging nun. So in the original, you had like, I think it's the first death in the film.
It is. It's his nanny, I think.
Yeah, Damien's nanny on his birthday. Everyone's out in the back having birthday cake and stuff. And suddenly the nanny just jumps out of the top window of the house with a noose around her neck.
She sees the dog that's just been hanging around and is very clearly a familiar of Satan. And you get this really cool thing where she looks into the eyes of the dog, and then this weird musical like plays. And then the next thing you know, she's on top of the building going, "Damien, look over here. It's all for you."
The nun in the prequel does the same thing, except she self-immolates at the same time for no reason.
Whoa.
It was still pretty good, but she also does say, "It's all for you."
I didn't get that.
Yeah, like, that was a weird thing to do a 100% parallel callback to, you know, because that's a very specific death scene, you know. And in this one, there was no evil dog to give her that idea.
And "It's all for you" makes sense with Damien because he's the Antichrist. So, you know, it's basically saying the world's for you is how I interpret that as being. Like, he's going to rule over everything if he's not stopped. I didn't really understand "it's all for you" in this context.
Yeah.
I didn't really understand why she chose to do, you know, why she set herself on fire.
Self-immolation as well.
Very, very strange.
I think it was to have the scene, but also make it seem as though it was new. But yeah, I felt like that, out of all of the scenes, actually, was probably, even though I did enjoy it, I felt like that was the most cheap.
Yeah,
I did like the character who did it. The character who did it was very creepy right from the get-go.
It's funny, isn't it? Because that scene, it does take you out of it a little bit just because of how on the nose it's exactly the same as the original Omen. And everything up until that point, like, you know, the shock and horror of some of the... I think that the first birthing scene... has taken place almost just before that, and that's horrifying. It's really grotesque. Yeah. And everything, and
yeah.
I won't go into too much detail about what happens, only to say that it involves orifices and demon claws. I won't go into what orifice, I won't go into whose demon claw, but it's yeah, it's pretty graphic.
What I would say, right, is that yeah, the pregnancy stuff in this is also very close to Rosemary's Baby. In fact, it's probably the biggest connection to Rosemary's Baby other than the conspiracy. With that in mind, would you say that this film, somewhat derivative of Rosemary's Baby, if it wasn't connected to The Omen, would it look like just a complete reimagining of Rosemary's Baby?
No, I wouldn't say so, because even though it's derivative in a certain extent, Rosemary's Baby isn't a very graphic film, and most of the drama from Rosemary's Baby is based on the fact that her husband is a piece of shit.
Yeah, fear and paranoia.
Yeah, he's the worst husband in movie history. Agrees to have his wife impregnated with the, you know, the son of the devil so that he can get a better acting career. It's just, he's a dickhead. Yeah.
He really is a piece of shit. And as far as I know, he was never into the Antichrist before conspirators got to him and basically offered him a role in a new movie if he betrayed his wife and his own to-be son.
Yeah, he's very much a useless, horrible person, because he could have just said, "No, I'll do it myself. I don't need the help of the devil to become a good actor."
Mm.
But no, he's, yeah... So I'd say in that sense, it's not derivative of Rosemary's Baby.
Apparently, it is pretty hard to get good roles in films, so maybe he did need the devil. Does it at all rankle you that the evildoers in this film, their plan to make basically everybody pro-Jesus by bringing the Antichrist into existence is, well, it's a little bit paradoxical, isn't it? And there's no real indication that they know how to control the Antichrist or even have a desire to control the Antichrist once it's born.
Yeah, so I think that the plan to bring the Antichrist into existence to make people have fear again and then rebirth the church, I think that's bullshit. I mean, you only have to look at Mrs. Baylock. Like, there's no part of her which is, you know, "Oh, Damien, I'm going to look after you until people fear you, and then Jesus will come back." No, her entire thing is...
And then she'll be the one to Magado dagger you in the back, basically. But that never happens. She has no inclination to. In fact, she seems to really love evil stuff.
Yeah, and these people seem to as well.
And that's same with these fucking nuns, too. Like, the nuns, like, Father Brennan's whole conspiracy theory right, which is proven to be correct, is that they are a sect within the church that operates completely against the values of the church, want to bring Satan into existence. And the idea is that by doing that, it will encourage these secularist protesters and this new age of secularism to back off a bit and bring more faithfuls back into the church. But there's no indication at all in the movie that there's a deadline for them to say, all right, we've had our fun using the devil to our advantage. Maybe we should eliminate him now.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be. When they're doing all the evil things they're doing, they're basically stood there smiling and, you know, watching it happen. Except for the hipster who seemingly gets dragged into it because he got promised some Pokemon cards or something like that.
Maybe. I reckon it was probably pills to enjoy the disco.
Yeah, so thanks for helping us with our evil plan, Brennan.
Yeah, I really got the impression he wasn't in on it. They just needed his seed.
I didn't need that. They just needed him to bring Margaret into their secret underground lair. I wonder at what point did he start to think this is a little bit weird. Was it when they told him to wear his black cape and they gave him $5 so he could get a taxi home at the end? So thanks for your help. Here's your free Big Mac voucher.
Oh, it's like a little bit more than a black cape, wouldn't it?
Probably
a full memory of how the conception of the baby actually happened would be enough to turn you off at that point. So yeah, it is quite a disturbing movie, especially when it comes to the pregnancies. I got the impression that you serve pregnancies, particularly the forced aspect of it, is somewhat thematic, and it has kind of become topical again. And it's one of those things where I'm not sure why this has happened, why we've gone backwards and we've started saying that men have a say in whether a woman can have an abortion or not. I mean, I don't know if there's any logic to men having a say in that. I do get the impression this film kind of wants to touch upon that topic.
It definitely is touching upon the idea of people having control over other people's bodies in that sense. And that's entirely what's going on.
Yeah.
Al, do you miss any of the classic spectacles of Satan's power that were in the original?
I do. I admit that I do. And this is what ties this in with nostalgia for me as well. Like, I want the comfortable feeling of joy when I see a photograph's premonition come to fruition and someone's, I don't know, falls under a bus or whatever. I do like that, but admittedly, I have to say, if they had done that again in this prequel, I think it would have taken the maturity out of it and sort of hurt the full product in a way, made it seem a little bit more cash grabby, if you get my meaning. Because they're already using an idea that's been around for like nearly 50 years at this point. One of the funnest aspects of the original movie was the whole photograph premonition thing. They didn't use it as a crutch at all in this film. And I just have to say that's a ballsy move, really. So I give them 100% respect for not using it, even though part of me is a bit of a child and I do want to see that.
I think it works really well because when you think about it, Damien being on Earth is probably what may actually give Satan his power to do what he does and influence the world the way he does in the original Omen. Because he's both there in physically and in spirit,
which is
why the Nagato daggers have to be used to fully kill Damien. But, you know, there are enough spectacles in this movie of horrific things that take place. Shall we talk about what other people have said about this movie? Because I think that could be a fun thing we could do when we do reviews for movies. If we don't have any smeg lines related to the movies, we can and we can look at some of the reviews that have come from the public. Because you've sent me through a couple of reviews for this movie. Both of them are, you know, one's 10 out of 10, one's 1 out of 10.
Let's have a look at this review now. I'm not sure who posted this one, but he sounds kind of funny.
The First Omen is a formidable film, the best horror film of the year so far. The First Omen is a film that can only be described positively from wonderful, incredible, great, but the most accurate and correct is that the film is a masterpiece. The script is a prequel and tells us the story of Damien Thorne's birth, and it does so in an effective and gloomy way. At times it seems predictable, but soon there are wonderful designed twists, as well as in including a tribute scenes to the first film from 1976. The director, Arkasha Stevenson's work, is first class. She tells his story in a slow way that's full of emotions. Together with the editing work, the film gives a result of art cinema, with the vein of such classics such as The Witch, 2015, Hereditary, or Suspiria, to name just a few. The art direction and filming locations were carefully chosen, resulting in a visual delight that cinematography manages to exalt in every scene.
And the rest of it's been cut off, Jason, I'm afraid. But you get this guy really, really loved it. 10 out of 10, he said. I think he was a bit over the top, to be honest.
I'd probably say that.
But I feel like what he said about the art direction was very, very much on point. What about this one star guy? I mean,
he's got some interesting things to say. The title of his review is, "Back in the 80s and 70s, we would say this film sucked. The First Omen, back in the 80s and 70s, we would say this film sucked. And why did it suck? I will give you an answer. Not scary at all. More of an artistic display in a European, that's right folks, Italian style, which went on forever. There was a mystery which made the viewer keep watching, but all art and no real build-up for zero scares. Instead of devils underground in the church, there was a silly order back in the 70s which made huge plot holes for a dumb ending. The ending was predictable, so predictable, and became silly. Hollywood has run out of ideas. Even the scary parts are a copy of a copy of ruined into the ground old idea. A break from cartoon superhero movies, my favorite, but not much better. 1 to 2 stars out of 10.
I mean, he did say in the middle of that rant, he did say there was a mystery which kept you watching.
But it was a build-up for zero scares.
Does that sound...
Actually, he said it was no real build-up for zero scares.
Is it all about the scares?
Well, he says no real build-up for zero scares, so he wanted it to build up for no scares, based on that.
Is that how you read it?
No real build-up for zero scares is saying, I want zero scares, but there was no build up to the zero scares.
I read it the other way around. Like, he wanted build up for a scare, but then there were no scares.
That's probably what he did mean.
So what he's saying is incorrect then, because he said there was no build-up, but he wanted a build-up.
But didn't want a scare.
To zero scares. It doesn't make sense, does it?
I guess that brings us to the end of our discussion on The First Omen. It's a really good film.
I don't know if that's the end right now. What I would say is, just to tie this a little bit in with Red Dwarf here, I am expecting a tie-in with Red Dwarf, actually, The Omen and Red Dwarf, happening sometime in the future. And I wrote a little miniature synopsis of what it could entail. So perhaps, you know, the Jim and Bexley alternate universe that got kind of retconned, maybe that could be brought back. They could make out that maybe one of the two, Jim or Bexley, let's just say Bexley, is actually the son of the devil. Lister has to go to Jim and Bexley's universe and prevent Bexley from gaining power. He does this by performing miracles to the cat race, increasing their faith in Cloyster the Stupid, giving him enough holy power to do a concentrated righteous bazookoid shot at his devil baby. This then revives the cat's faith, which turns him away from his selfish behaviors and also saves the universe from the anti-Cloist in the process. I think it would be remiss of Grant or Naylor to ignore this possible future, like if they could maybe combine their efforts with Arcasius Stevenson.
I think, you know, there'd be some... there's a chance to have some really grotesque imagery that would stay with viewers. You know, if it's anything to go by this movie, you know, just imagining what Lister would have to go through would be quite scary. But we do know that Lister is the ultimate atheist and who jumpstarts the second Big Bang, despite the fact he's also a pantheist at the same time. That's what he said. He did say he was a pantheist. He believes God is in all things.
Not a frying pantheist.
No, not a frying pantheist. So I think it's there, and maybe jumpstart in the second Big Bang if he fails. This is you know, his backup plan, and there could be a tense scene where Rimmer's trying to tell
him
not to do it.
He can be very contradictory, can't he?
He can. He's like,
sorry,
Travis
say
Bickle.
That again, mate, about...
a walking contradiction. I can't do a Travis Bickle impression of that scene, but yeah, he eats a pie. I remember that. So I think it's a good synopsis. I like that time travel's inexplicably in there, in a sense. And, you know, it does make the anti-Cloist, it works very, very well. So, yeah, I'd like to see that. In fact, I think it's the next logical step to... And Rimmer is the perfect Mrs. Baylock.
Oh, Rimmer's the perfect Miss Baylock, yeah. 100%.
Can you imagine? Hello, Bexley. Let's posse. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know that annoying. Come on, boys. Let's posse.
Yeah, that's what he says.
Yeah, that's what he says.
Quite a heinous thing. That's all I said.
Yeah, it's the most heinous thing Grimm has ever said. Is that, come on, boys. Let's posse.
It quite possibly is.
Would you recommend this film to fans of The Omen and also newcomers to the franchise?
I would. I think people who are looking for a standalone horror movie will be happy with this one. It's very atmospheric. It's got a lot of style in its cinematography. The setting that it's in, the Italian setting, it's quite beautiful to look at. Also, the plot line, you know, it's intriguing. It's got enough twists and turns that that keeps you from getting bored from the inevitable end, which should be obvious by the original film's summary anyway. And, yeah, I am impressed with it. And, yeah, fans of The Omen, I think they would enjoy it too, because me and you are fans of The Omen.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I would highly recommend it, and not just to fans of the old movie. There's enough in there that ties it in quite well to the original Omen that I think you'll be quite surprised when those tie-ins happen. It's relatively faithful to the original Omen as well, so you're not going to be thrown off by anything. And even for newcomers to the franchise, you know, it's a great standalone movie. It's got some really great imagery in there. Bring a barf bag. But you'll enjoy it. It's a great film. So, Alex, what's next for the Shuffle Brothers?
Well, it's going to be a Red Dwarf Shuffle episode next week, because we're going to watch the episode Justice, Series 4, Episode 3, if I'm not mistaken. So stay tuned for that one next week, Shufflers. And also, yeah, let us know what you thought of this particular episode. I'd like to know if there's anything, if you got a good review out of it, I suppose.
Leave us a review!
Yeah, indeed. So, yeah, we'll do...
That's the last Gregory Peck impression we'll do for a long time.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everyone. And remember... Don't go around looking for trouble.
Just stick around, listen to the Red Dwarf Shuffle.
Who's smart?
We're smart. We're smart.
Thank you for listening to the Red Dwarf Shuffle with those awful smegheads, Alex and Jason. You can connect with them on Facebook and Instagram at Red Dwarf Shuffle. You can also send a question, comment, feedback, insult, threat or love letter to reddwarfshuffle@outlook.com. We love receiving your dribble. See you next time.